I'm Amber.
And this is
Waking Up the Witch.
We're your neighborhood witches. Each week, we talk about all things witchy and connect with other humans in a storytelling format about navigating life on this floating rock.
We're two curious ladies trying to understand the human experience. But while we do that, we think it's important to honor the people that lived here before us and honor the cultures and traditions that we're being inspired by.
This podcast is about waking up the witch, which means we are learning and growing every day. That being said, we are always open to feedback on how we can do better.
The views and opinions of our guests don't necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Waking Up the Witch.
Now, let's go, ghouls!
Hey, Amber.
Hi, Taylor.
How's it going?
So good. How are you?
So good. Living the dream.
Truly.
Yeah, for real. Like, I love my life.
I love my life.
It's a good place to be in.
How about today's episode?
It was real and raw, and I hope that everyone's ready to cry.
Yeah, get your box of tissues now.
Yeah. Body chills, like, as soon as the breath, like,
our grounding breath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just the whole time. Oh, my God. It was beautiful. I'm just really honored for, to be the space for her to share this story. This is someone that I love a lot and care for deeply and have built. I'm actually her stylist, and she was one of my first clients when I moved here, and I've just built like a really deep friendship with her, and I love her so much. So I'm excited to share part of her story, or all of her story, part of her story with you guys today.
It was so good. She's such a kind, sweet soul, and it was I felt grateful for her to feel like she could be so vulnerable here with us and to share her story. I think it's very, very important and so powerful. And I just know that there are going to be so many people out there who are going to feel so deeply for her. And really, I'm sure there's so many who can see themselves in her story too.
It needs to be
told. It's important. Yeah.
It is. So
grateful.
We hope you enjoy today's episode. We're going to make this quick because it's a pretty long one and we want you to have all the time to enjoy. So grab your tissues and enjoy this episode.
Let's start by taking 3 deep intentional breaths to ground our energy, breathing in through the nose and exhaling through the mouth. Releasing what no longer serves you right now. Taking another deep breath in. Bringing in all your blessings close to your heart. And release. And one last big breath in. Hold at the top. And exhale, grounding you into your body, into your space, and into the earth. I'd like to call in our higher selves of all 3 of us here on this call today, as well as the higher selves of all who are meant to hear this. Please bring forth any spiritual guides that wish to be with us today, our ancestors, anyone here to receive this healing medicine. Please allow for whatever is meant to come through, today, and let it be for the highest good of all involved across all timelines and dimensions. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
So tingly.
Yeah, I got a lot of chills on that one. I love when that happens. So excited. Amanda, thank you so much for joining us today. Please introduce yourself. Tell us who you are. We're so happy to have you here.
Hey, thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me. I'm Amanda. I'm a mother. I'm a ceramic artist. My husband and I own a gem and mineral business. And most recently, I became a stage 3 breast cancer survivor. And I have just a really big and wild story to tell about
that. I'm so happy to hold that space. I'm already crying.
I know, me too. I was great. Great. It's been fucking 30 seconds and I'm crying.
I'm also on day 3 of my period and it's been a really emotional one. I just cry at the drop of a hat.
I'm not.
Not yet. You got some time still. Oh, Amanda.
So
thanks
healing.
For letting
so
us hear your story and just be a platform for you to share who you are and that the importance and the journey that you've been on.
Oh, I am honored. And I have to tell you guys that the timing of this is bonkers.
Tell us all about it.
And the timing of all of this has been bonkers. I feel like I should start by saying that, where to begin the story? I'm going to start kind of at the end. And then I'll go back. So last January of 2023, my mom died. And it was very unexpected. You know, she went to sleep and didn't wake up in the morning. And then 2 days later, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And so there's just always been for me this straight line between my mother and this breast cancer. The other piece of this is that she had breast cancer in 2021. So the wild timing about making this recording today is that last week, we finally got to do her memorial. And it had just gotten put off because for obvious reasons. And so we had a small family only gathering where we spread her ashes. It was so just beautiful, healing. And I felt like I came away from that experience with just so much resolution in the relationship with my mom that I thought I would never have. So that's why this is just, it's really fun to be able to tell that story, to tell the story of me and her, but also be kind of telling it from a place of feeling really at peace with it after 30 years of conflict and tension and, you know, anger and not knowing how to forgive what happened. And amazing. That's kind of the ending.
I mean, congratulations. that's so incredible to have that peace, to have been able to find that peace.
I had felt like it wasn't going to happen. It was like, this is just a broken thing in my life and I just have to deal with it. And
Well, take us back to the very beginning. Where were you born? Who were your parents? Take us all the way back.
So I was born in Southern California in a small town. Both of my parents grew up there. And my, you know, I had both grandparents, like lots of aunts and uncles. And then when I was 3, my parents divorced. And when I was 6, my mom moved me and my little sister to Salt Lake City, Utah,
wow,
actually, to get a PhD. And so we lived there for 4 years. And then we moved to Chicago when I was 10, because my mom had gotten, you know, had completed schooling and had gotten a job as a professor in Chicago. Gosh, and it's like, before I get into this portion of the story, I always, or not always, but I just keep feeling like I need to bring in just the truth and the fact that she was a single mom. That, you know, when I sort of think about where we were born, she had a lot of family support. And then even in Utah, we lived in like student family housing, and there was a daycare center. And, you know, I think that she had a lot of support there. And then when we went to Chicago, you know, life was really different.
And the rest of her and family was in California.
Yeah. All of our family was in California, including my dad.
Far away.
Yeah,
and it was you and how many siblings?
Just me and my sister. And I was the oldest. Yeah, she's about a year and a half younger than me. And you know, I think also it's like this also feels complicated to just say in public on a podcast, but I think my mom was suffering some mental health struggles, and I'm not sure what those were, you know, specifically. But when we got to Chicago, she started throwing just these massive tantrums, like full unleash rage at me, very specifically me and not really my sister. And, you know, they would like last for hours on end and often last until like all hours of the night, to where I was going to school in the morning, having only gotten a couple hours of sleep, and my eyes were, you know, so puffy, I could barely open them. And my breath would be like, you know, that crying thing.
How
still
old were you?
Happening. You know, I was 10. So this started when I was 10, and it's, you know, I was 10, 11, 12. And the story around this was also very much that this was happening because of who I was. Like if I could just be better, she wouldn't be so stressed out. And this wouldn't be happening. So I, you know, it's it's one of those things, like when you hear about somebody getting brainwashed, right? Like my worldview was so much that like I was a broken person, and this is happening to like her, the extreme that she was going through was happening to me because of how bad I was. And it also wasn't happening to my sister. And I, you know, I think that's like a really typical dynamic in the mental illness that I think maybe my mom had, is that there's one child who's just all bad and one child who's all good, or even, you know, like very often my sister was my victim and my mom was standing up for her. But, you know, there was this dynamic.
That's a lot of weight for you to hold. And you're the oldest, so everything that you're presenting her with is brand new experiences. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. And, you know, my sister and I, personality wise, are very different. My sister was very shy, like painfully shy. And she was also just like really responsible, like very, you know, she got her homework done without being asked. And I have not an earth sign in my entire chart. Spirit. Like I'm just,
yeah,
I'm a free spirit. Not that that's a reason to abuse a child. So my mental health started to unravel, because just, I was responsible for all of the stress and the problems in my mom's life. My first suicide attempt was when I was 12. And I visited the mental hospital. That's when my mom started taking me to like therapists and psychiatrists, and I was getting prescribed medications. And it was like, instead of that kind of being this indication that maybe like what she was doing was creating the problem, it was almost like that justified her rage and like all it was like, see what I mean? There is something wrong with you.
Probably what happens every time. Like, not every time. I'm sure that there's cases where that's not, but it's that the cycle. It's the parenting is not nourishing the child in a way, and they're acting out for love, and then the parents like, see, I told you, they're fucking crazy.
So the story very much just it was it was that I was a lot of trouble.
Where was your dad? Just not, he wasn't, were you ever going out there? Did you see him? Did she try to ship you off there?
We would go and, we would go and visit him, and he would come and visit us. And God, you know, this is another really kind of interesting piece and complicated piece, is that what I remember from my dad coming to visit is me like sitting in a restaurant melting into tears and not knowing how to like tell him what was happening. And my dad is this very like kind of stoic, like hard-shelled person, and he wouldn't know how to connect or meet me, and I would just be melting and like not wanting him to know like what a horrible person I was, that I was causing this. And of course, what I didn't know is that like, that's why they divorced, was because what was happening to me was happening to him. And so I always wonder, like, why didn't my dad, why didn't he do anything? Eventually he did, but it took years. I mean, I was 16 when he finally moved to Chicago. And that was after, you know, I started suicide attempts at 12. There was like several more to follow. I was bulimic. I was a cutter. I was promiscuous. I was, you know, I started drinking. I fulfilled kind of that story eventually that my mom was saying. I became this problem child.
I'm bad,
child.
I'll show you what bad looks like.
Yeah, and it's funny also because like I carried that story about me, but when I look at myself, when I, like, now I'm 40 years old, I have a 15-year-old. I'm not not sure that I was actually a whole lot worse than
no.
a lot of teenagers were. I think that that was...
I mean, yeah. Me and all the teenagers I know were doing that,
like, I left my mother's house.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, I left my mother's world thinking, like, no one has been as shameful and made as many mistakes as I've made. Like, I just thinking that I was just the absolute worst.
I think that's like an interesting thing, though. Like, if you were even so self-aware to try to find where your problem was at such a young age, like, I think kids who are genuinely acting out and being shitty aren't so like thinking about themselves internally in a way of like, look how shitty and bad I'm being. I don't know. I could be wrong, but I feel like kids who are just naturally going to be little shits aren't really thinking about the consequences or how they're affecting others. And it sounds like you were very reflective in that.
And coping.
Mm-hmm. So much. And like trying, you know, so often just minding my own business, like genuinely, like, okay, there's this one story, this story for me kind of shows just how thorough the brainwashing was, that all this conflict and all these issues were the cause of me. I didn't understand the truth of it until I was in my 30s, and I like sat up in bed and was like, wait a minute, that was a lie. So when I was 14, it was like freshman year of high school, my sister had an event, and we were all going to the event to like support my sister. And a big story in these like tantrums was that I was taking away from my sister, you know, that I took all the attention, all the energy. Yeah. So I'm at this event for my sister. It's her night. My mom decides that I'm drunk.
But you were not.
She's just decided I am absolutely not drunk. I am not stoned. I am 100% sober and like ready to do the thing for my sister. And my mom, not only is she mad I'm drunk, but now she's mad I'm lying. She thinks I'm lying about not being drunk. So she drags me out of the event and to the police station to get a breathalyzer test, which they won't. And I'm fine, do it. But they won't do it, which like escalates her even further. And so we get back in the car and she's beating the crap out of me with her fist until I jump out of the car and I run home and I get into bed and I like throw the covers over my head. And, you know, I think she called the police because she thought I was going to kill myself. You know, it was like this big, dramatic, explosive thing and event with me on this night that was supposed to be for my sister. And, you know, it was blamed on me, and I carried the guilt and the shame of it until I was sometime in my 30s. And it occurred to me that I looked at that story, like, wait a minute, I wasn't drunk. That whole thing with like, I was minding my own business. Like
who really took the attention away from your sister?
Yeah, I was going to say, did anyone even get to support your sister? So
no,
she's having this event and this whole drama is going on.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Heavy.
Yeah, it was such a like horrible time of life, like just a really rough and horrible and gnarly like just a really wild way to live, actually.
So when your dad moves to Chicago, do you move in with him?
Yes. Yeah. So my dad moved to Chicago. I moved in with him. I changed schools, and that definitely helped kind of like stop the bleeding. You know, I end up finishing high school and I tried to do college, but it was funny. I went to 1 year of college and kind of like sometime in the first semester, I had this moment where I'm like sitting in my dorm room and I'm looking out the window and I just hear the clearest voice in my belly say, "You are not going to be here next year. Like, this is not the place for you." So I ended up moving to Oregon, actually, when I was 19. And I think at that point, I was so determined to like prove to everyone that I wasn't this like basket case that I had been made out to be. You know, I really felt like my mom kind of had the microphone with all of our family in California. I felt really isolated.
What brought you to Oregon?
So I met a guy and he was moving to Oregon and that relationship didn't last for very long. It was not a great relationship. But, you know, I think the very first month that I was here, I met like my two best friends. They're still the closest best friends in my life. And one of them, she was my upstairs neighbor. She was in her 40s. And she and I just like had this kind of soul connection. We had a really similar story. And I felt like, you know, she was somebody who could just like reflect to me, like the truth of who I was after having just felt like every adult was critical and punishing and judgy.
And so then like, you have this like woman in her 40s being like, "You're loved, you're okay. Nothing that you did was wrong."
Yeah. And like, you don't see what a, like, you're a good person. Yeah. Like you have this idea of yourself that's just incorrect.
False narrative.
You know,
it's like been told to you.
Yeah, it was really, it was, she was absolutely a gift. Yeah. And really where like healing started.
So grateful you found her. And are you and your sister close?
Yeah, me too.
Like, like growing up, were you close and are you close now?
So I would say we were close when we were younger. And then we had a lot of problems. I really resented her because I felt like she was constantly the cause of a lot of the abuse I was getting.
Yeah.
In hindsight, was she?
And no, she was not the cause at all. Absolutely. No, absolutely not. My mom, you know, and she and I have like, we have an understanding.
Mm-hmm. Did your sister, like, was she ever witness to the abuse that was happening? So she like kind of can see how it was different for her versus how it was for you.
Okay. Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think she's had her own untangling.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think that there were some times where I was not very nice to her. Like I have to, you know, like I was not a perfect person. And, you know, I was probably pretty mean to her in some moments.
Not that it's right, you know, but I also see, like, of course, you know, like you're getting all this abuse. Yeah. And that happens a lot, you know, like if you just think about kids who are having abuse in the home, a lot of them are bullies, like at school. And so, you know, it doesn't make it right, but it is like, that's the example that's being given to them. And when you are going through all of this hurt and pain yourself, then you have all this pain that needs to be released. And we often release it on the people closest to us. Mm-hmm. So, and if she's the good kid in mom's eyes, it makes it even easier for her to be your target.
Completely. That, yes, exactly. And I would say that at this point now we are close. Like, she and I have healed together.
Good. That's so lucky.
We both have two girls. You know, we get along really well, and we don't have mom in between causing drama. Yeah, so in those days, my sister was still at home, and then she went to college, and we kind of, we went our separate ways.
Did she stay with your mom, like, when you moved in with your dad, or did you both go to live with your dad?
No, she stayed with my mom, and that was kind of a source of contention for her, that me and my dad actually left her there. And I wasn't really in a position to do anything about that, and I wonder why my dad didn't do more in that.
Is your dad still alive?
Yes, he is.
Okay, so us back to Oregon and like your journey starting here.
So in Oregon, it was like I finally kind of just started to be in my own energy without somebody picking fights with me. By the time I got out of the relationship that I moved to Oregon in, I thinking about this being the Waking Up the Witch podcast, this is when I found tarot cards, and I found like Clarissa Pinkola Estes. I actually had this on tape. She wrote Women Who Run with the Wolves. And she what's really wonderful is to listen to her telling the stories. If you can find audiobook, she has got just the most wonderful storytelling voice.
So do you, actually.
Oh, thank you.
I was just thinking, like, you're doing so great, and just wanted to reflect that back to you.
I know you're an amazing storyteller.
You're doing so good. Yeah.
That's, I appreciate that. Thank you. So on that book on tape, the Women Who Run with the Wolves, there was this story of the Selkie. I don't know, have you guys ever heard the story of the Selkie?
No.
Okay, so it's like an old Celtic myth about a woman a seal who can come up onto land and become a woman. And so one time this Selkie comes up onto land, and a fisherman steals her seal skin and makes her become his wife. And you know, she agrees, and she has kids, but she just doesn't feel like herself. She feels like she just loses herself. And so eventually, I'm like, how much of this story do I tell? Eventually, she gets her seal skin back and, you know, gets to go swim in the ocean. Mm-hmm. It's one of those stories that I just like it feels like it healed me.
It's like that saying that, like, you can't judge a fish by how it can climb a tree or something. Yeah, I'm butchering that, but it's like that.
Yeah, it's just like this story about somebody stealing your true nature and trying to fit into a world that doesn't feel right. That's it's not where you belong. And then there's this like wild part of you that needs this other environment. I would just like listen to that in the car. And then I found this meditation book on tape. So I started meditating and I started writing down my dreams and, I feel like I just kind of started to put myself back together.
Just discovering who you actually are.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was like, it was messy. Like I was also kind of messy and, imperfect. Like I don't know. I don't want to like give the impression that I like moved to Oregon and then I meditated every day and I was perfect.
Totally.
That just wasn't the case at all. But I did, I'm like, God, what else happened? I met another friend who was like incredibly creative. And I think, for me, when I started finding creativity, that was like a humongous part of coming back to life. Yeah.
You're so creative.
I'm so freaking creative. Like it's just something that I need, like sleep and water and exercise. Mm-hmm. And I actually think it's something that we all need. I think that that was a huge part of what was lost when I think about being, you know, a child and going through what I was going through. I wasn't a child. Like I wasn't exploring my interests and finding out what I like to do. The way that an adolescence is this whole, you know, almost like physiological process of becoming, like how thwarted and stunted that was, how that was stolen from me. Moving along in Oregon, I met my husband. Or he became my husband, and he was an incredibly like wildly creative person and just like an industrious person. He was a fire dancer, and I think that's like kind of how one of the ways we started hanging out is I started learning fire dancing, and that got me really in my body. Mm. In this creative way. And then the fire was fun and powerful. And so we went to Burning Man, and then we decided that we really wanted to travel. And he had a humongous dog, a big, gigantic, like wolf shepherd dog. And we, in order to travel, we were going to need a place for him to be. So we moved to Alabama, where his parents were, so that we could save up money and have a place for the dog to stay. And that period of time was like this wild blossoming of creativity for me. It was so fun. Oh, I know why. Because I found the book, The Artist's Way.
So good.
So good. And if there's, you know, like ever, like to anybody who like wants to be creative in any way, like that book is, that book is really, it's like a beautiful way to like unearth that in yourself. And I just, you know, I dove more into tarot and I found pottery. And once I started putting my hands on clay, like I just started to feel really like at home, like in my body, in myself. That was very.
There's your earth.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so, that was a really fun time of life being in Alabama.
How old were you when you moved there?
So I was 22 when I moved there. And I think when we came back, I was like 25 or 26.
Wow.
Yeah, we moved back to Oregon. And really shortly after we moved back, we opened the store.
Mm.
What's the store?
The store, the crystal store. So we opened a gem and mineral store in Ashland. And it was one of those things like, you know, we had just moved back. Do we like walk around town with, you know, resumes? Do we like, what are we doing? And we just decided to, we found the space downtown Ashland. And I just felt it, like I felt like something was supposed to go there. So we opened a gem and mineral store. And it's been there, you know, we've been open for 15 years.
Crazy.
That's so exciting.
And at the same time, I think maybe 3 months after we opened the store, I got pregnant with our first baby. And
were you married yet?
Yeah, so we got married in August and my baby was born in December. So I was like, you know, 6 months pregnant when we got married, and we had been together for 5 years at that point. So yeah, and you know, throughout all of this time, as far as my mom goes, like, I still had a relationship with her. There, it was still very much like the story was very much that like we got into a lot of fights when I was younger, right? Like I was still, kind of carrying a lot of the responsibility and the shame. About what had happened, you know, about, it's like when you get into a fight with somebody, it feels awful. It feels yucky. Like no one wants that. Like anyway, so I'm bringing her back up because right after I had my baby, I asked her to please wait to not come to see us until her spring break. But she didn't like that. She wanted to come at Christmas time.
No, too soon.
And so she booked a plane ticket and then left the country because she had this other trip that she was going on. So she ended up at my house a week after my baby was born. And, you know, it didn't go well, basically. Yeah. It just a couple days after she got there, she tried to have a conversation with me, like, late at night in my bedroom. I could tell she was emotionally, like, off, like, you know, just the way that I could sense her. And I could tell that it wasn't, like, this was not a good idea for us to have any discussion whatsoever. And I was asking, you know, I asked her to leave. Over and over and over, like, calmly.
Was she staying with you?
Yeah, she was staying with us. Gosh. Yeah, yeah. Okay. And then I finally blew up and was like, get the fuck out.
Yeah.
And then she just melted and it was full blown tantrum mode and screaming and how dare you tell me to get the fuck out and you don't appreciate
what your husband doing.
He asked her to leave.
Yeah. Okay.
He was like, what are you doing? Like, why?
Right.
Like, your daughter just had a baby. This is, but I have to say that was really the first time that I had seen that behavior from her, like, as an adult, like me being an adult. And it was the first time that I, like, got it. Like, I was like, oh, that, like, I, once again, I was minding my own business. Like, I had no intention of fighting anybody tonight. I was, like, nursing a baby. I was wide open after just having, like, you know, the most, like, I mean, how, like, how do you describe, like, childbirth? Yeah. There's nothing more vulnerable.
Yeah. And those, you said a week?
Yeah.
That's like, you're just in the thick of it. Like, I don't even really remember the first week. It was so intense.
No, totally. So intense. You know, nights and days are all over the place. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just, I was like not, not even really leaving the house.
No.
No, great. not really, yeah. Not at all. Not leaving the house, mm-hmm. at all. Not even going on walks. And then, like, yeah. I was in bed.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So did you, how long did she stay after that?
Oh, she left the next day. She was asked to leave. Yeah.
Was this just one day then with her, this happened, and then the blow up happened?
Let's see. I think she was maybe there for a day, and then the blow up happened the second day. And, jeez. You know,
and then did you quit talking? Sorry.
Oh, so, well, what happened afterwards was I think I sent her a scathing message, like maybe an email or something, and like, how dare you destroy my baby bubble, you know?
Yeah.
How dare you come in?
For real, though.
There was, you're already told not to.
Beyond unacceptable behavior. Mm. And so she called every single person on all sides of my family, like my dad, his parents, you know, her parents, my new husband's parents.
Oh, God.
And told on me, like told them. But of course, like always, because that's just kind of always how it would go. She only told them that I screamed, get the fuck out at her.
Yeah.
I didn't say that I was like,
right.
You know, asking everything her calmly to please like not have this conversation with me right now. Like, mm-hmm. please leave. Yeah, it was just a horrible, horrible way to start motherhood.
Yeah, it sets like a tone, like you're healing and your hormones are everywhere. And
yeah.
You're just trying to rest and then you're kind of like thrown back into your fight or flight.
Yeah. Thrown fair. Back. It wasn't fair.
No.
It wasn't fair. But also what came of that was a conversation. I had conversations with her siblings and kind of heard finally, like, I can't believe that no one told me this before this moment, but like finally heard that, yeah, this is something she does. Like, mm-hmm. yeah.
Oh my gosh, though, what a relief to know like all these phone calls and madness that it's like people kind of, there's like some explanation for her part. So hopefully they're not,
you know,
believing her and thinking you're this horrible person.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also, you know, I started to have a track record after I left home, and I didn't have conflict with people. I didn't have chaotic breakdowns. I wasn't, you know, like all of that chaos and drama was like done, like, once I got out of her realm. Yeah. So I also just kind of like lean on that. I'm like, well, like I've been in a really harmonious and happy relationship for 5 years.
Yeah.
I have friends that I've had for years. Like, you know, I don't think it's me.
Yeah.
So moving along, I, you know, motherhood, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh my God, those days, you know, the baby days are just absolute beautiful sweetness and bliss. And there's this, just like, just wonderful, just like wonderful sweetness. And then I would say a couple years after my daughter was born, I started to really experience a lot of sort of pain in my body.
Mm.
And I was going through bouts of depression. And I, you know, I had a lot of like resistance to the mental, like sort of mainstream mental health
mm-hmm.
system. I was like, I don't really feel like I need, you know, to be diagnosed and prescribed something And I, you know, I kind of just like lost faith in that system. I felt like I really needed something.
Part of your trauma.
Yeah. 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 Kind of like fuck those people, but not really. I don't actually feel that way. I've had good therapy since then. But the pain in my body led me to a network chiropractor. And that's a really interesting system. And it's very like somatic, like feeling pain, like feeling in your body and rewiring the nervous system to sort of react differently. So that was like a really profound system of healing for me.
I'm so glad you found that. That's holy amazing. Cow.
It was incredible. And then I had my second baby, and that was also really wonderful.
I have a question about motherhood.
Yeah.
Do you feel like once you had your children, you were just like even more confused by your mother's actions, like, and feeling like looking at your beautiful children and being like, I could never act that way towards you or feel that way towards you? And it just like puts everything into this whole other perspective of like what the actual fuck.
Yeah, it really, you know, I have a memory of well, actually both me and my sister remember just like her not waking up in the morning to get us ready for school. Like we were on our own to do that. And when you like, when you look at a 6-year old, like in your own 6-year old, and you're like, I can't.
You can't do anything.
I can't imagine expecting that out of you. Like, how did you, like, I, you know, that, yeah, it puts a, it, it put a totally different perspective. And, oh, my mom was also just such an interesting person. Because the truth is that, like, if you were to meet her, you would love her. She was so, like, the other side of her was, like, this larger than life, like, fun and love and excitement. She was vivacious and enthusiastic. And
What was, I'm curious what her PhD was in.
Communication.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So if you're wondering why I didn't decide to go back to college, I was like, I don't know.
What kind of life skills come out of that college?
It's like the highest degree you can get in communication. Okay.
But yeah, you're asking like, you know, did having my own children change the way it completely changed. And in fact, it like, it was incredibly healing for me to look at a 10-year-old and think, you know, when my daughter was 10, actually I have a 10-year-old, I have a 10 and a 15-year-old. I actually, that's that, which is a weird coincidence that was really the cauldron of the age that I went through this was 10
so many chills
and 15. Wow. Yeah. And so I, oh my God. Yeah. I look at it. I look at my 10-year-old and I'm just like, there's just not a single thing that she could have done or not do that would like actually deserve being yelled at. Like,
I have another question. Yeah. So I'm sure you see like a lot of your own qualities in your girls.
Yeah.
And so it's like, and then you're nourishing all of the things you love about them. Yeah. And it's like thinking, oh, if I would have had that, like maybe I could have, you know, experienced this freeness or this playfulness or this creativity or this love that your girls are experiencing.
Yeah. I think that,
I don't think that's a question, but just a
statement. It's a beautiful statement because that's like the grief of it. Mm-hmm. But then there's also, so, you know, like I said, probably around the time I was, I mean, it was like what that Saturn returns time where it really became clear to me that, you know, when I left home, I had to like prove that I was okay. And then yeah. I finally was like, oh, fuck, I'm not okay. Like, mm-hmm. I'm in a lot of pain about what happened. This hurt me.
And it's been stored in your and body. It's coming up in this physical disease and disease.
And it's you know, going to, like, it manifests in your life and your experiences. Yeah. And so then, like, I started that process of healing, and, you know, I'm 41 now. And it's been a continual process of like, how do I not stay stuck in the victimhood of that? Like, I don't want to be, you know, at a certain point in my 30s, I'm like, I don't want to be mad at my mom forever. Like, I want to be healed, but also I'm mad at her. But then also... Yeah. You know, that then a certain point, and actually this is maybe a good place to go with this, at a certain point, it was like, okay, I feel like I don't have to be so mad at her, but like, how do I have a relationship with her? And that's been the really difficult, you know, issue the past several years. I told you she had breast cancer in 2021, and I went to go stay with her when she was going through chemo, and gosh, it was like like the first night I was there, I was asleep in bed, and in the middle of the night, she comes in to give me a hug. And it was like alarming and disturbing and just a little like, what? I was like fast asleep. Like, it felt kind of violating.
Yeah.
And then every time I would walk into the room, she would want a hug from me, because that was, you know, that was kind of the other side of her. It was just like this, like, super love, like, she loved me so much. You know, there's just like these, like, really kind of just like this split person. And so she would want a hug from me, and I would go in and hug her, and then I would be ready to like let go, but she would hang on, and I'd like really be trying to let go. And then finally she would let me go, but I would be like so frustrated. You know, so it was like, I didn't feel like she and I were ever able to be like in a good relationship with each other, because I wasn't really a part of the relationship. I don't know how else to explain that. Like,
Yeah.
Like what I wanted or needed just never mattered as much as what she wanted. Like, she wants, she's not done with the hug. So that's what's happening. And if I pull away too soon, I like risk pissing her off. And that's, and I, like, she's going through chemo. I'm not going to get into a fight with somebody who's going. So, anyway, so. Luckily, she got through that, and then, this is, so now I come to the part where I had this, well, I'll start with, like, my mom and I had this conversation, we were, you know, talking on the phone, and she asked if she could come visit, and the answer was no, but I didn't know how to say it. And so I said, you know, I think I said, like, let me think about it. And instead I like stewed about it for months. I was like, I felt tormented because the truth is that I didn't want her to come visit. Mm-hmm. You know, it was going to
be your sacred bubble that you've created where you can be you safely.
Yep. Yep. And that was the other thing, is that kind of the more healed I became, the harder it was to be around her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's hard and pretty heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And I felt a lot of guilt, like a lot of guilt, actually. Mm-hmm. And so around the time that she asked this question, I felt that I had this like hot red spot show up on my breast. And then that red spot very quickly turned into a lump. And then that lump very quickly grew. And then by the time I got a mammogram, it was like the size of my fist. It was massive.
Oh my God.
And then, yeah, she passed away. She passed away. And the last time we talked, it was on Christmas. And I felt, it's not necessarily that I felt like regretful. But of course, I also did. Like, I felt guilty. Mm-hmm. I felt guilty because I also know that this thing, like this part of her, it wasn't all of her.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Yeah, and actually that, like, that's actual healing. So yeah, then my God, she died, and then I got dragged completely into just so completely into this like underworld where I was suddenly fighting for my life.
Mm-hmm. Without even really being able to process that your mom and your abuser had just died.
Yeah. Completely not. Yeah. And not to mention the one time that my mom could actually have probably been.
Yeah.
A help. Oh my gosh. And it's also, I'm like, the story of going through cancer and cancer treatment, it was also a really healing experience in the way that, I put out a call for a meal train.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we had 8 weeks open, and I had a meal delivered for my family every single day for 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Like I still like it actually still like chokes me up to even think about. Like, what a beautiful thing that was to have so many people show up.
Mm.
Losing my hair was the worst, the absolute, it was, you know, super humiliating, honestly.
And it probably makes it feel more real.
Yeah. Yeah. And it made me feel so obvious. You know, I know other people going through cancer that like that wasn't a part of what they had, you know, mm-hmm. and they could hide it. Like, they didn't have to sort of like tell everybody. Like, it felt like I was just this walking cancer. Like, but I also, like, there were also like moments of gifts, you know, just like the preciousness of life, the clarity that the most important, like if I'm going to die, the most important thing that I've done is mothering. It is my relationship with my girls. Like, that's the most important thing. Like, I think maybe at another point I would come on this podcast and try to make myself sound more important or accomplished or, but like, no, actually, yeah, being a mom, like if I'm going to die, like that was the most important.
Oh, that's so beautiful and so healing because of the childhood that you had. Yeah. And so no matter what, to have the peace of knowing that you really mothered, and not just mothered, but
gave you didn't just have kids,
gave your babies like the experience of childhood that you'd so deserved yourself.
Totally.
So Amanda made a Facebook group for like all of the people in her life that love her, and just to like make updates and keep everyone posted, and just being like an observer of that. I remember really high highs, and then really low lows, like days where you'd be like, the grass is so fucking green, the blue like the sky is so blue, the flowers are like incredible. I feel like I'm on fucking drugs. I'm just like high on life. And then a couple days later you'd be like, I'm in bed, I'm questioning the purpose of all of this, and I just need to be held.
That was, oh my God, that was, that was it. I had, like, I can remember this day, I think it was like the day before my birthday, or a couple days before, and I walked down to the beach. We were at the coast. It was like the one trip that we went on. I walked down to the coast and I felt like I was riding the sunbeams to heaven. I had never felt so ecstatic in my entire life. Like the plants were sparkling, the water was like it was just, everything was sparkling and golden and amazing. And other times where I was so scared, so fucking scared. And then, like, there's something really also cool about, not cool, I don't know what the word, I don't know what the it's word okay. would be. The, like, there's something about, like, traveling that train of thought. Like, okay, what if the worst happens? What if I die? You know? And then finding out that, like, I actually feel like everything will be okay, even if that happens. Like, okay, that's a pretty powerful train of thought, or like encounter,
making peace with death,
like, you know, the cancer, I hope it doesn't come back, but it could, and to just sort of experience that, like, that's okay.
How do you feel like you're living life differently coming into close contact with death?
My priorities got super clear. Like I said, that you know, the mothering that I've got kids right now, and they're getting old fast. I mean, I have a 15-year-old.
I mean, they were little when I met you, so it's like that just time perspective is kind of crazy.
Yep. My oldest was in elementary school when I started, and she's in high school now when I started seeing you. Yeah.
So crazy.
I know. So yeah, I think like that is one thing. I in some ways I feel like I just finished. I mean, I finished in December. It's April 1st today. It was such a full bodied like fuckery to go through 5 months of chemo, and I did 2 surgeries. I did 33 rounds of radiation. And radiation actually is like it has a really long kind of recovery. You know, I'm just still rebuilding physically.
Do you feel comfortable sharing that it's put you in like perimenopause?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and, like, yeah. How you're feeling
about that?
That's actually that was a really that's kind of a big piece of my grief about all of this. It's not necessarily that I don't know that I was planning on having any more children, but I wasn't expecting to be in menopause at 40 and chemo put me there. I haven't had a cycle in over a year. And that's a wild thing to lose. Just like all of the sudden without warning, like kind of like losing your mom and then losing your hair and then
such transformation.
It's been like a
what
wild...
do you feel like besides the aspect of like maybe being able to have kids, like what feels hard about that? Is it that like it makes you feel like a woman? Is it?
I think that like, it's just, it? It, yeah, it's been just a really, it's been a part of my body since I was a teenager. It's been a part of just like, yeah, who I am as a woman. And like, you know, my friends are like, oh, I'm getting my cycle. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember when that used to happen. Like, it just, it's just this loss. And in some ways, I'm not even sure what to make of it. Like,
yeah.
It's just like I didn't expect to be in menopause so young.
Well, and like it's gonna be such a different type of menopause for you because you're also processing all that's been put into your body over the past year to help you heal.
Yeah.
So you're just experiencing so many different things.
Yeah. It's interesting to put it all into words because, like I said, I think I am still kind of in this state of processing. But the question of like, am I living differently? Like, I think I'm more easily listening to sort of my intuition, my desires. When I finished, I felt very like open and like, oh my God, what do I do with myself? Where do I go from here? And then I became aware of human design. Are you guys familiar with that's a whole, I mean, that's an entire podcast in of itself, but that really resonated with me. So I feel like very committed, very strongly committed to living my design. Like,
So many chills.
Yeah. And it's been wild how
what are you? Like, what's your main energetic form?
Yeah, I'm a manifesting generator. I'm a sacral authority. Mm-hmm. So those are like the things that you need to know, like your energy type, your authority, and your strategy.
Our guest last week does that, but we talked so long about her story that we didn't get to offering. So we have another interview with her in next a couple week. Weeks. Oh, so if anybody doesn't know what those words mean, we will be learning them together in a couple
awesome.
Weeks.
That's great. Yeah.
Perfect timing.
Yes, it is. Yeah. I mean, it's blowing my mind and stuff is showing up like super much opportunities. Like, you know, it's been really cool to watch actually.
Hold on. Kurt's got to bring the baby.
Okay.
She's fussing. And then we'll start wrapping up.
Yeah.
While you're doing that, I've had this spider on my mic stand this whole time. Neat. And like, spiders represent creativity and creation. Yeah. Like, as you're talking about your womb, like, you know, and feeling a grief loss of the creation of womb, and to me it's just so clear that like you are still a creator.
Oh god,
you
just
get to create in a different way.
Oh totally, totally right. There's like an etheric womb.
Yeah.
And that's my like deep connected spot. Like that's where I feel super clear guidance and intuition. So, you know, it's like, I know it's okay. I think that that's another really major just theme in all of this is like trust, because things like the divine, like the design of things blow me away, actually.
Truly.
Like, you know, it occurred to me as we were heading to California for my mom's memorial that I was going there with my 10 and my 15-year-old. And I was also going there with the same hairdo that I had when I was 14, like in the midst of all of this. And, you know, so there were all these like coincidences, you know, all these things that lined up.
It's so interesting too, and like having the 10-year-old and the 15-year-old, you know, just bringing that back.
Yeah.
And how those were like the most, I mean, for lack of a better term, like damaged parts of your being.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, and
Amanda, can you see in the camera? Oh, can you see
our, I can't see you guys at all?
Okay, Taylor's gonna turn it on real quick so you can see. The baby.
Yes, please.
Just hit where it says on the right it says low data mode for all. Undo that. Can you see now, Amanda?
There she is. Oh my gosh. Hi, beautiful girl. Oh my goodness.
She's so cute.
Oh, she's so precious. Oh my gosh.
She's so big.
I love her.
She's so cute. Oh, you just want to be part of the coven group.
Well, yes, of course.
She said, my friend is here. This isn't fair. What are we doing?
My goodness. So good.
My kids, you're so cute.
We still got to do a baby hang soon. Okay. Should we? All right. Let's start wrapping up a little bit.
Yeah. If you just want to put like a little exclamation point on the story.
Okay. Yeah. I've got the perfect exclamation. This isn't a really important thing to say. So, I said we just did my mom's memorial, and it was really important to me that there be like this representation of wholeness, you know, that this part of her can also be included in this like moment of love for her. And what absolutely floored me was the way that I feel like I walked away having retrieved like the part of me that also loved her. Like after so many years of, you know, not really getting to see like her in wholeness. And so like the morning that we were leaving, I had a dream. This is so wild. I woke up from this dream where I was in a midwifery office and I pulled out this little book that I had made for her years ago for Mother's Day. And it had like, you know, drawings that I made and like quotes from books and poems. And it was just so interesting to me to have this dream where I like retrieved this thing that I made her. You know, I don't know. Felt like, I feel like I retrieved my love for her also. Like, yeah.
So healing.
Fucking healing.
I'm so glad you finally, I don't like the word closure, but no, you got some sense of
just peace.
I was like, I feel like I'm in the world card, you know, the tarot card, the world. I was like, this is that card, like this moment. Whoa. It is that card. Like we're complete, you know, this, like whatever this contract that she and I had is over. I can send her away with love, with understanding that she did her best and she didn't mean to. And, you know, it sucks. And
yeah. And it's allowed to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for being so vulnerable and sharing all of the depths of your life and just being fucking real.
Absolutely.
And I know we talked about a lot of the gritty stuff, but as someone that knows you and loves you, I do think you've had a very bright and shiny, beautiful life, and
I have.
Not all that really like defines you, you know. It's just kind of part of the building blocks, I guess.
Yeah, thank you.
Will you pull a card for us?
Oh, hell yeah.
If it's the world, I'm going to shit my pants. Right? All right.
Yeah, same.
Just to kind of piggyback off of that, my aunt passed away 2 years ago, and I, you know, it's really hard to get out of here on a flight, so I bought an $800 fucking flight because it was supposed to be like, you know, she was hanging on, you know, and everybody, I got there and she was on hospice and everyone's like, I think she was waiting for you. Aww. And will you hold her while you get my tit out? And I'm like, just had my tarot cards, I'm just learning them, and we're all sitting around her and I'm pulling cards and stuff, and then it's like the middle of the night and I was like, I'm gonna pull a card for Kara, and that's actually the card that I pulled.
Wow.
It was like completion. Oof. You know, like it's okay to let go, all the things. And then she passed at 5 a.m.
Oh.
And all my eczema went away as soon as she died, so that was
Whoa.
Yeah, I like was on some crazy elimination diet for weeks and couldn't figure out what was wrong with me, and then it just went away.
Oh, cool.
What did we get?
We've got the magician.
Amazing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's also so perfect.
Card number one, new beginnings.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Ooh.
So what does that card mean for the listeners?
So that card, that is about your power, having like knowing your power, knowing that you have total control of, to make choices and make decisions and make things happen, and like to know that you are in that driver's seat of power and decision. I'm like, here's my little book. I am miracles manifesting. I know exactly what I want. I'm focused and clear. This is a card of action. Oh my God. The power to create is at your fingertips. There's no divide between you and the support of the elements. In the center of a cyclical sacred dance, you embrace your full potential. Wow. Yeah.
So perfect.
Yeah, that's great. That is great.
And what great energy for you to receive too, yeah, like following that completed cycle. Yeah.
A fresh start, a new beginning. You get to start your cycle all over again and make your story whatever you want it to
be. Yeah. It's, I mean, there's, it feels like a new world.
Oh, God. Thank you for pulling us a card.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for asking.
Yes, it's always fun when the guest has a little bit of magic to share. Aww. We just like to seal it with, oh, the spider has hopped ship. This is crazy.
He's on the move.
It's now on my ring light, like away from me about 2 feet. He's creating.
Okay.
What's you doing, Goldie?
He's being crazy.
Well, we like to ask all of our guests 2 questions at the very end, and the first question is, what is something you do for self-care that you just can't live without?
I have a morning practice. I'm like sitting in my practice spot right now, but I sit down and meditate every morning, and I started it early 2020, and it's just something I need every single day.
Do you listen to like guided meditations, or you just sit with your own thoughts and allow for whatever to come through you?
Different things. I do different things. Mm-hmm. I've got, you know, sometimes I'll listen to guided meditation. I like those. And a lot of the times I'll do somatic breathing. I almost always end with like pulling a card, and then I've got a little journal, like a tarot journal, so I like to write about the cards when they come up. And sometimes that I'll like color or paint or
I love that. Yeah,
I just, you know.
How much time do you give yourself?
It depends. Sometimes maybe it's short, like 10 minutes, and sometimes it's an hour, and I like can feel kind of indulgent.
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Okay, and if you could ask your, yes.
If you could tell.
If you could tell your younger self one thing, what would that be? And that could be your younger self when you were 10, or it could be yesterday, and anywhere in between.
Oh, man. Yeah, I would tell my, you know, myself who was in that, like, hard cauldron of fire with my mom, that it's going to be over. It's gonna be
last forever.
Yeah, it's not gonna last forever, and life is going to get so fucking good. Like, there's so much. There's so much to look forward to.
I think, not to make it about myself.
Yeah,
but I think what motherhood has taught me, in the most beautiful and heartbreaking way, is that everything in life is temporary. Yeah. Everything, no matter what it is, there
if something feels hard or if something feels beautiful. Yeah. If something feels hard, it's not going to last forever. Yeah. And if something feels beautiful, just soak it all in because it's also not going to last
forever. Yeah, I had a friend who said it was at like one of my blessing ways where we were going around giving advice or something. And she said, "This moment only once." Oh. It's like, you know, for both things.
Mm-hmm. I love that so much.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Yeah. And
when it's hard, it'll be over.
So fucking sad.
Yeah, it is.
Mm. All right. Well, this has been one of my favorite episodes. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. We got to get a box of tissues in here.
Yeah. I walked out there to grab Goldie and I was like, we're all crying just in there.
Oh. So much. Yeah. Thank you for sharing your beautiful story. Oh, it's so important.
Yes.
You're going to help so many people that you don't even know or will never know through sharing so vulnerably. So we're grateful for you for that.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me to do this. I really appreciate that.
So excited.
Thank you. So I want you to go and stick your feet on the earth.
Oh, I'm going to go sit on the ground. Thank you so much.
Pull some cards and journal the messages.
I will.
And what do you have for everybody? What self-care?
Okay, so the self-care for everybody, it's the first. And in the breast cancer community, we feel it on the first. So the self-care is, you know, when you're taking your shower or getting dressed or laying in bed, feel your boobies. And if there is anything amiss, go get a mammogram.
Yes, take care of those boobies. Yeah,
take care of the boobies.
I'll grab yours.
Feel it on the first.
Your boobs feel great.
Oh, thank you. Your boobs feel like they're full of milk.
Yeah. I'm going to have to send you a picture. We walked to Starbucks today and I nursed the baby in Starbucks and the other boob was leaking and I picked her up and I just had to walk all the way home with like a stain all the way down both my nipples.
Gosh.
This is motherhood.
Yep. So wet. It's like that. You're just wet all the time. Yeah.
Wet all the time. Yep.
So great.
This episode has been produced and mixed by Caleb Tunstall.
Find us on TikTok and Instagram at Waking Up the Witch.
Please email us your witchy stories, ghost stories, corrections, and advice questions to wakingupthewitch@gmail.com.
Love you.
Love you.